I welcome you with all my heart. Yet in reality, there's no I, there's no my, there's no heart.
Good.
So how can I welcome you with all my heart? I'm glad you're here.
We're glad we're here.
Just the way you are. No heart, no my, no welcome. Just be here now. Exactly the way you are. There is absolutely nothing you need to do. There's no thing you have to become. There are no better days coming later. There's no past that haunts you. You are pure awareness right now. Can you accept this about yourself? There is really no past and no future. There never was a past. Nothing ever happened. Yet most of you believe you are a body and you have gone through various experiences. But I tell you, there are no experiences that you've gone through. There is no body that has ever existed. Why do you want to make believe? You want to make believe that you are a human being and you've had experiences in your life of a various nature. You have a past. You feel guilty. You go through all kinds of things in your mind. Why do you do this? You simply have to awaken to the fact that you are here. This is eternity. This is all there is. There's nothing else. I really do not know what some of you are looking for. You're looking to become enlightened. No one ever became enlightened. No one has ever been self-realized. There is no such thing. Drop all your concepts, your preconceived ideas, your beliefs. Some of you here are searching for a better life. There is no better life. This is it. This is all you get. Yet when I say this is it, you think in your mind of your problems. You think of something that's wrong with you, or with the world, or with the universe. When I say this is it, you allow yourself to think. That's the first mistake you make. Allowing yourself to think, to analyze. Trying to understand. This is a mistake. No one can understand because there's nothing to understand. When I say this is it, I am referring to your true nature as absolute reality. this is it. I'm not referring to the things you're thinking about. Those are all lies. When we begin to think about man's inhumanity to man, the destruction of animal life for fun and for human consumption, the destruction of the rainforest, earthquakes, cataclysms. When we try to reconcile this with God, as it were, we can never do it. It doesn't make sense. How can God, wherever he is, or she is, or it is, allow all these dastardly things to take place in the world? You become totally confused, disillusioned, when you try to reconcile these things. Yet, in truth, there is absolutely nothing to reconcile. The picture I just painted does not exist. There is absolutely nothing happening in the universe due to the fact there is no universe. Just by understanding this, not with your mind, or not by trying to understand, but by being. Just by being, not being this or being that. Just by existing, you become totally free. For you are totally free. There is no karma that binds you. There is no predestination that affects you in any way. None of these things exist. There is no reincarnation. You may think this is a contradiction because I speak of these things once in a while. Remember, to whom do these things come? Who believes in reincarnation? Who believes in karma? Who believes in being punished for their sins? The mind, not you. It is your mind that appears to have been programmed to believe all these lies. Therefore, if you come to me and tell me you're suffering, I will tell you, well, this is only karma. This is something you're going through, it will pass. I have to say this to you because this is where you're coming from right now. But the truth is, no one suffers. There is no karma. There's absolutely nothing that causes suffering or pain or anything else. Where would it come from if there's only God? where would all these things come from if there's only effortless pure awareness? Self-contained absolute reality, Brahman, which is all-pervading. There is no room for anything else. There's no room for your ideas about fears and junk that's going on in your head. Nonsense. Nothing exists. Nothing is absolute reality. Ultimate oneness, nirvana. You have always been nothing, and you will always be nothing. But as soon as you begin to talk, you spoil it. As soon as you begin to analyze it, to try to figure it out, to scientifically come up with a plan of how the universe works, you spoil it. For it is beyond human understanding, beyond human comprehension. Your human mind and your human thoughts are only here to destroy you. They're not your friends. No thought is your friend. Not even a good thought. Some of you still believe you have to hold on to good thoughts. Good thoughts are lies, just like bad thoughts. In order to have a good thought, you have to know about bad thoughts. Otherwise, why would you want to hold on to a good thought? You want to replace it and hold it instead of a bad thought. All thoughts are lies. There has to be no thought whatsoever. No thinking allowed. You have to be tired of going through the vicissitudes of life and experiencing good and bad, up and down, right and wrong, becoming happy when things are going your way, becoming miserable when they go the other way, then becoming happy again when things go your way again, becoming miserable when they turn. When will you drop the whole thing? What does it take to make you forget all these things? To let go of all these things? What does it take to awaken? It takes desire to begin with. Desire to become something else. And then dropping desire and just becoming. Dropping becoming and just being. Dropping being and just there was once a little bird who lived in the bottom of a great giant tree. the tree was so big the bird never saw the top of it at all. But the little bird was contented by eating certain sweet berries that grow on the tree. And the little bird would chirp and sing and be very happy. One day the little bird ran out of sweet berries, and there were only sour berries left. The little bird partook of the sour berries and became miserable, cursed under its breath, became angry, mad. But then the sweet berries grew again. And the little bird forgot about the sour berries and started to eat the sweet berries once more, chirped and sang, became happy, till all the sweet berries were gone once again, and there were sour berries, and the bird ate the berries and cursed under its breath again, "God damn, no good son of a..." Angry. So the bird thought, "I'm going to fly around this tree and see if I can find any more sweet berries." It began to fly around the tree. As it did, it gazed up to the top of the tree, which was a long way up, and it saw a majestic, translucent, beautiful looking bird sitting on top of the branch at the top of the tree, way up there. The bird looked so peaceful, so radiant, so loving, so free. The little bird felt something. It said to itself, "I've got to find out the secret of this big bird. Why it's so contented. It's not looking for berries. It's not doing anything. It just sits there, happy, majestic, free. I think I'll fly up to it and find out its secret." It started to fly up the tree. On the way up, it noticed some yellow-looking berries. It stopped and started to partake of these berries. And they were simply delicious. It had never tasted berries like this before. It forgot all about the big bird as it chirped and sang and enjoyed itself. But again, like everything else, it had to come to an end. The sweet berries were finished. And again, there were sour berries left. And again, the bird mumbled under its breath, cursed, became upset, and again it flew around the tree to search for more berries, and happened to look up and saw that beautiful, translucent, majestic looking bird again, way up and top of the tree. It forgot about the bird, but now it remembered. The little bird said to itself, "I'm really going to fly up to that big bird now and find out its secret of peace." It started to fly, but again, three quarters up the tree, it saw purple looking berries that looked simply delicious. It stopped to eat of the berries, and they were so good, the bird again forgot about that big bird. Became happy, chirping, singing, until it ran out of the berries again. The same thing happened over again. Sour berries, sweet berries. Just went on and on and on. Finally, after many years, the little bird was flying around the tree and looked up at that big bird. It was totally disgusted of all the berries, sweet and sour. I didn't care any longer about sweet berries or chirping or singing. It wanted to find the peace that the big bird had. It made up its mind resolutely to fly straight toward the big bird. Nothing would stop it this time. And so it was. The little bird flew directly up, 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 right into the big bird. And when it did, it discovered something very interesting. It discovered that it had been the big bird all along, all the time. It was the big bird. It had become itself. Now, isn't this just like us? We're born into a world that tells us we have to make something out of ourselves. So we make complete idiots out of ourselves. We have to have gainful employment. We have to do this and we have to do that. So we do. And we're happy as long as things are going our way. We're contented as long as things are going the way we think they should go. We've got perfect health and we've got perfect finances and we've got perfect peace of mind and we have a perfect family and we have a perfect this and a perfect that. We feel good. But then things begin to change like they do. Everything must change. The only thing permanent in life is change. Everything changes. We become upset. Like a little bird, we curse under our breath. We become angry. We become mean. Because things are not going our way. Then something changes again. And things go our way again. So we become happy once again. We sing, we dance, we get drunk, we go crazy. We do all kinds of things. We party. Then something happens. The doctor tells us we've got cancer. We become bankrupt. There's a recession. We become terminated from our employment. And we become miserable once again. The story is repeated again and again and again and again. The time finally comes for some of us. I say some of us. Because most people keep doing these things till they die. They never stop. They keep looking for good things to take the place of bad things till they die. As if that's the answer. But there are some of us. You can call this God's grace, if you like. They've been touched by someone or by something within themselves, and they feel that there is another universe, there's something else. There is something else that does not have pain or human happiness, no mental anguish, no good thoughts. There is something beyond all this. And they make up their mind to vehemently find the something, no matter what it takes. This means they have to start giving up or emptying themselves of the old. for they've already been filled with delusion, wrong thinking, nonsense, ignorance. They can't hold any more. In other words, they cannot add to what's already full. If you have a flask of water and you want to fill it with wine, you have to empty the water first. And so it is with us. We're filled with all the foolishness, with all the preconceived ideas, with all the nonsense, with all the concepts. Unfortunately, most people do not realize this. They think they're quite normal. But they're not normal, I'm the only one that's normal. And they're all crazy. I'm the only sane one. Don't believe that. The truth is, I'm the crazy one. And you're all considered sane. Due to the fact that I do not accept all this stuff. And you do. The majority rules. If the majority of the people believe the same thing, then I'm the crazy one, they lock me up in the crazy house. Anyway, you can't be full of your nonsensical thinking and ideas and expect to become self-realized, expect to awaken, expect to become free. There is work you have to do. The work is to empty yourself out. Totally and completely. When you empty yourself out, you will be free. There's nothing for you to fill up because reality is already there. It's just like when you have a room filled with furniture. What has happened to the space in which you put the furniture? Has the space diminished? You have the same space in the room, it hasn't got any place. Except the furniture is also in the room with the space. When you remove the furniture, the same space will be there that always was there. The original space was there when you put the furniture in the room. Now you take the furniture out, the space is still there. So it is with us. Our true nature is Satchitananda. Perfect knowledge, perfect existence, and perfect bliss. We are pure awareness. This is like the space. Except we have cleared up our minds with thoughts, feelings, ideas that are erroneous and have to go. And so we begin to work on a plan, those of us who feel this, to totally empty ourselves. And if we're sincere, we find the right teacher, the right book, the right something that tells us what to do. And we listen. And we put this first in our lives. For we never know when the life is going to be over. We make this first. What else can be more important than to find yourself, than to become totally free and liberated? Is there anything else in this world that is more important than this? We find a process, something we can work with. And one of the best ways we can work with something in this life is to practice self-inquiry. It's a way of getting rid of all the stuff that we're filled with. We therefore begin by examining our thoughts. No matter what type of thoughts we have, good thoughts or bad thoughts, we inquire, to whom does this come? In other words, we're saying, where did these thoughts come from? I didn't ask to think about these thoughts. Did they arise by themselves? Where did they come from? To whom did they come? The answer always comes, well, these thoughts come to me. I feel them. I am experiencing these thoughts. They make me feel bad. They make me feel confused. They make me feel this way. They make me feel that way. All these thoughts come to me. We continue with the self-inquiry. Who is this me that all the thoughts come to? Where did the me come from? Who gave birth to the me? Me is another name for I. Where did the I come from who thinks of these thoughts? As an example, we feel there's something wrong with our body and we say, I am sick. We know scientifically the body cannot become sick by itself. The body is just a heap of flesh and bones and organs. It can do nothing by itself. It has no power. But when you say, I am sick, you are invoking the power of I am, which causes a delusion of sickness in your body. And this is true of everything else in your life, every other experience that you think is wrong or right. So you begin to understand that I is responsible for your lot, for what you are. I is responsible. You therefore have a job on your hands to remove the I. To totally annihilate the I. When you begin to see that all of your thoughts and your feelings that you've had all these years are really part of the I. I feels all of these things. I is the one who causes all the problems. You therefore make up your mind you're going to remove the I. So you inquire, who am I? Which means, what is the source of the I? And that's very profound. You do not use your brain or your mind to come up with an answer. there is no answer. The reason there is no answer is because the I thought does not really exist. When you try to come up with an answer, you are enforcing the I thought to continue its job of deluding you. Therefore, you simply inquire, who am I? Where did the I come from? And you keep still. As you keep still, new thoughts come to you. What kinds of thoughts? You repeat the same procedure. You say to yourself, okay, to whom do these thoughts come? Where do these things come from? Who feels them? Again, I do. I feel these thoughts. They're telling me that things are bad. They're telling me that things are good. Like a little bird, good and bad. My thoughts tell me all of these things. But I always say, I feel this. I feel that. So again, who am I? What is the source of the I? And we keep still. Let's practice this together, shall we? Close your eyes. And do not do anything until a thought comes into your mind. It makes no difference what kind of a thought it is, good or bad. Ask yourself, to whom does this thought come? I feel it comes to me. I feel this, the thought. I think this thought. If I think this thought, then who am I? Where did the I come from that thinks this thought? And you keep still. As soon as another thought comes to you, continue the same practice. Feel free to ask any questions.
Repeat that exercise again.
The whole thing?
No, just the part. To whom?
You inquire to whom does this come?
Uh-huh.
You're inquiring to whom does the thoughts come? And then you say to me, I think these thoughts, they come to me. Therefore, who am I? Or what is the source of the I that thinks these thoughts? And you keep silent. You never answer that question. When further thoughts come along, you do the same thing.
Talking about, I mean, the thoughts being lies and all of this, are you speaking relatively, what are the origin of the lies, or what is the origin of the mind? It's like almost a value judgment, making reference to that.
I'm not speaking relatively, I'm not speaking spiritually. I'm not speaking. All of the thoughts, the ideas, the concepts, the body, the mind, everything is a lie. It does not exist. That's why it's a lie. Only emptiness exists. Nothing exists. No thing. Everything else must be a lie, therefore. Because it's not the truth.
Could you say that the lie is the same as illusion?
Yes.
Or Maya?
It is the same.
It's all a dream.
Maya means the grand illusion, the lie.
But what is the origin of that? That illusion, that lie, all of the... It sounds pejorative when you refer to
it. Yes. There is no origin because it never existed. Only something that exists has an origin. Since everything is subject to change, there's no possible origin. It never was created. Therefore, it doesn't have to be uncreated. You simply have to look at it and realize and nothing like this exists. It has no origin. It's like asking, what is the purpose of life? There is no purpose. Life has no purpose whatsoever. For life does not exist the way we think it does. Everything that exists is an emanation of your mind. The mind emanates all existence and appears to be so. But it's not really true. Because there is no mind. So there's no existence. There's no origin of the mind. There's no origin. There's no thing.
And this is the illusion from which we are to awaken, so to speak, right?
You shouldn't get caught up in the concept of the great illusion also. Because when you think there is a great illusion staring you in the face, the illusion becomes greater. Therefore, look at it lightly. Realize it's an illusion that doesn't exist. Don't take it too serious. In other words, don't make a big thing out of an illusion. We can get caught up in the illusion. And then you'll have to get rid of the illusion. Keep everything simple.
Well, did you say, Robert, that there's no such thing as truth?
There's no such thing as truth, because in order to have truth, there has to be a falsity. Something has to be false, therefore we say there's only truth. But in truth and reality, there's no truth, there's no false, there's no up, there's no down, there's no forward, there's no backward. It has no name.
And that's the only thing that doesn't change.
There's absolutely nothing that doesn't change.
That sounds very inviting.
Then enter.
I'm saying that facetiously, and I shouldn't, but it's just so devoid of everything that sounds attractive to me.
Everything that sounds attractive is a concept of your mind. Your mind has come to the conclusion that this is attractive and this is ugly. They're both imposters. They both have to be transcended.
Like love and infinite joy, is that just another trap?
Love and infinite joy are all nonsense. When there's love, there's attachment. When there's attachment, there's ego. When there's ego, there's the I thought. If you get rid of the eyesight, you get rid of all the love and get rid of all the attachments and everything else.
But isn't there a transcendental love, just like that would be the same as consciousness or bliss, that's not attachment? Isn't it relative to the level in which you're speaking?
I hear what you're saying. But the love that we have a concept of does not really exist.
But isn't perhaps a love beyond our understanding?
Yes, there is. But it's so different. You can only experience it.
Well, that's another illusion. It's beyond my understanding. That's an illusion, too.
That's just an answer to a question. Of course it's an illusion. Every time I say a word, it's an illusion. Every time I talk, it's an illusion. Everything we're doing together is an illusion.
Is satsang an illusion?
Satsang an illusion. It's all an illusion. It's as if you're having a dream. In the dream, you're going to satsang, we're doing all these things that appear so real. And you get into it, and then you wake up, and it's all gone. Who needs satsang?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. Nobody ever went to sleep. There's no one to wake up. Those are just words. If you went to sleep, you would have to wake up. Because since you never went to sleep, you do not have to wake up. If you think about it, you become confused.
Nobody to realize anything, any truth, any
real, or any body to wake up. Now you've got it. If all these positive qualities are illusions, what is our motivation for achieving liberation? Or achieving that which, whatever that thing that we're talking about.
The motivation is doing this, what we're doing here. Yeah, there's nothing happening here. So the motivation is no motivation.
Isn't that the end of things when there's no motivation?
There is no end. Because it never was the beginning.
So it's a divine paradox.
You can call it that.
I can call it that.
Why bother?
We just go right back again.
That's right.
So home is a divine paradox.
And there really is nothing to do with?
Absolutely nothing. But don't feel that you will not do anything. In the appearance world, you will do whatever you came to this world to do without you being the doer. That's the paradox. You appear to be doing things, but yet you are not the doer. You are free.
Robert, in that sense, is it easier just to commit suicide and you just get out of the universe?
Not really, because you're doing nothing when you commit suicide.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's no possibility of realize anything, and nobody there to realize any truth of it, or to be awakened. What is the point? It's no hope then.
The point is to be yourself. Committing suicide is the same as having desires. Unless you get rid of the desires, you can never really know the truth or awaken. Therefore, when you commit suicide, you will appear to come back again and again and go through the same conditions again and again until you awaken by yourself without any thoughts of suicide.
Yes, why do we have to come back again?
Because you're caught in the wheel of delusion because you committed suicide.
In other words, suicide would be part of the illusion, right?
Yes, you have not awakened to the truth.
When you're identifying with the body, you're saying they get rid of the body, then I'm free.
Yes.
Right, so, yeah, that's good. So that means you're holding to the idea of the body. So, in holding to the idea of the body, you would hold to the idea of reincarnation.
Okay. You would appear to come back again, and karma would appear to be real, and reincarnation would appear to be real, and you'll go through the whole trip again and again. But it doesn't exist. Therefore, you're fortunate to have a body, so to speak, to be where you are right now, because you can sort of awaken to this and be free. And then there's no coming, there's no going. There's no birth, there's no death.
So the whole idea just to be here now?
To be here now is the way it's done. When you're here now, there's nobody left to think or to do anything.
Nothing else matters but right now.
This second.
guess what I've been trying to say is that this doesn't sound enticing.
Good.
So I need to drop all my thoughts of what's on my spiritual goals, my lofty.
Exactly.
And just face this question that you posed for.
Exactly.
Because I have a burning desire to know that.
You have a burning desire to do something, that's how it begins. As you continue with self-inquiry, your desire begins to fade away, and you become empty little by little, until you finally become completely empty, and you become nothing.
But Robert, isn't there still a subtle yearning to be free, and that's the motivation?
That's in the beginning stages. But that subtle yearning has to go also. Everything has to go.
Buddhism, there's warnings about the pitfalls of nihilism. How does one keep from falling into that?
This is not nihilism. As you inquire, who am I? Little by little, everything is destroyed. And you enter a place where you are pure awareness.
Back to what I was just asking a minute ago. It seems like the yearning to be free arises spontaneously, and that won't disappear of itself until I do. So isn't that still back to that? Isn't that still the motivation?
The yearning appears to be a motivation when you first begin the practice. As you continue in the practice, the so-called motivation begins to disappear. It's like you become lighter and lighter. There's no mind left to have a motivation. And to be motivated, there has to be a mind. As you keep destroying the mind by inquiring to whom this has come, the mind just begins to disappear in its entirety. And therefore, there's no motivation.
You mean even identification with the so-called motivation that advances?
The identification with the motivation is the I thought. As the I thought becomes weaker and weaker and becomes completely transcended, there is no longer any motivation to do anything. How can you be the self and have motivation? The self is.
So-called third evils, like earthquakes and things like that, are hard to stop. There are things that we can do. What of this consciousness in the light of the tasks of the troubled earth?
As you believe you are the body, it is your duty to make this a better world in which to live. To feed the homeless, to help the poor, to be of service to humanity, to join causes and do all these things. But it's the body doing this. It's as if you were dreaming. And in the dream you did all these things. But when you awaken from the dream, who's left to do these things? There's no personality left. There's no ego left that has to do any of these things.
There's no things to do. Wouldn't that be true? On the level you're speaking, there would be no
thing. There's nothing there, right?
So there is no motivation to do any of these things for others, so-called others.
Well, yes, because your body will do whatever it has to do, but you will not, since you have absolutely nothing to do with your body. As long as the body appearance is there, it will appear to be doing things, being of service, doing kind deeds. But there's no doer.
Does the witness go too?
The witness goes too. Everything goes.
So then what's the purpose?
There is no purpose. Why do you want the purpose? There's no purpose whatsoever. The mind has to have a purpose. When there's no more mind, there's no more purpose.
Can the witness really get really goals by inquiring itself, sort of like kind of seems like trying to dig yourself out of a hole?
Of course it can, because you're inquiring. To whom does the witness come? The witness comes to your mind. The mind that becomes a witness. Therefore, as you keep inquiring to whom these things come, there will be nothing left for you to do. It will all go.
A jnani who has realized the identity of his inner being with the infinite Brahman, there is no birth, there is no rebirth, no migration, not even liberation, for he is already liberated. He has firmly established in an experience of the absolute existence, knowledge, bliss, the Satchitananda Atman. The continued existence of the world and of his own body appears to the jnani only as an illusion, the appearance of which he cannot remove, but which cannot further deceive him till the time when after the decease of the body he wanders not forth, but remains where he is and what he is, and eternally was, the first principle of all beings and things, the original, eternal, pure, free Brahman. While living, and even when the body falls dead, the jnani rests in his own essential nature, his own svarupa, that is all full, all pure, timeless consciousness and bliss. The following assertions made by a jnani constitute his own deepest convictions and experience. I am infinite, imperishable, self-luminous, self-existent. I am beginningless, endless, decayless, birthless, deathless. Never was I born. I am ever free, perfect, independent. I alone am. I pervade the entire universe. I am all permeating and interpenetrating. I am supreme peace and freedom absolute. A jnani lives forever. He has attained life everlasting. Cravings torture him not. Sins stain him not. Birth and death touch him not. He is free from all cravings and longings. He ever rests in his own Satchitananda Svarupa. He sees the one infinite self in all, and all in the infinite self which is his being. he remains forever as the infinite self of consciousness and delight.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Robert.
Do we have any announcements?
Yes,